Welcome to the Florida Specifier Podcast. This is Brett Cyphers, and I'm joined today by my co-hosts and fellow members of the Specifier Editorial Board. First, there's our editor-in-chief, Patrick Gillespie, who is an advisor with Adams & Reese. Then there's Jeff Littlejohn. He's with National Stormwater Trust, on-site performance, and he's also a senior advisor at Adams & Reese. Next, there's Ryan Matthews. He's a government affairs expert with the Gray Robinson Law Firm. And I'm a government and external affairs director for Sea and Shoreline, and I host another podcast called Water for Fighting for the Specifier Media Universe. Gentlemen, it's good to see you.
Nice to see you.
So what's the latest? What's going on? It's July. July means, well, one thing.
Hot.
It's, yeah, real hot.
Three things, then. It means hot. It means the 250th birthday of America.
America.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, and it means...
a soccer loss once every 4 years.
I don't wish to discuss that very often.
All right, sorry. Still losing sleep.
And Marco.
That was number three, actually.
Get your swimsuits ready.
That's right. But before we get to Marco, which is a big deal for us, let's start with, I don't know, the paper. Patrick, do you want to talk about the front page a little bit?
Yeah. So this is a fun addition, and excited that everyone who attends Marco will be able to get a copy in their swag bag. So that'll be exciting for everyone. I think really had a good mix of kind of some hard news, some features on a lot of the projects going on around the state that are interesting, and just a shout out to St. John's River Water Management District. They always do a really strong job of describing the kind of work that they have ongoing. Obviously, they have a lot in their territory to work on, but they do a really good job of explaining what those things are. So appreciate them always providing good content. Had to really pivot right before the print deadline to get the finalization of the budget, the governor's vetoes in. But then just throughout the paper, quite a bit of good content on PFAS, hurricane season, a lot about WOTUS and some other hot topics that are going on around the state and country. So overall, I really enjoyed this one, and obviously we'll kind of dive into a little bit of the content in a minute.
Yeah, there's a ton in there, but before we get to, you know, the articles and stuff like that, I guess we're going to talk about an article right now, which is related to the budget. As you said, you pivoted to it. Ryan, you're kind of our expert resident.
Using that term
budget
loosely.
Guy. Yeah. Talk about what happened, because it is pretty significant. It's the governor's last year, and he went out with, it's not the biggest bang he's ever made, but a pretty big bang.
Yeah, I mean, just to follow up on regular advisor Patrick's sort of comments on flying in under the radar, our state's fiscal year starts July 1. Obviously, we had some tumult, if you will, in terms of the legislature landing the plane and getting a budget in front of the governor, and he ended up vetoing, I think it was around $1.7 billion out of that state budget. And that could be the second most he's ever vetoed, I think, in his 8-year term. And this will be his last chance to wield that veto pen, and he took advantage of it, largely on member projects. But there were some big ticket items that he vetoed in the budget as well. I mean, looking at the environmental portion of the budget, which this audience is most likely most concerned with, not surprisingly, Everglades is a big ticket item in that budget. I think some of the things we were looking at and we've talked about in previous episodes was land conservation. You know, what would be the ultimate sort of decision point on how much rural and family lands and DACs would be funded versus how much Florida Forever would be funded? And really, you know, rural and family lands was the big winner as it relates to that, getting about $425 million in the budget. For the third year in a row, we've gone back and forth between either, you know, funding substantially member projects, water projects in particular, versus various DEP grant programs, namely the Water Quality Improvement Grant, which was not funded this year, unfortunately. I mean, we've talked about it year over year. When it was last funded, it was funded at $200 million. There was $2 billion worth of applications for that program. So it does leave a lot of local governments in the lurch to a certain degree when it comes to wastewater funding, because that was kind of the most frequently applied to grant program for those folks, other than SRF, of course, federal pass-through dollars. But we still had some funding for the Indian River Lagoon, for Biscayne Bay, for the Alternative Water Supply Program, for Spring. So there still are ample grant opportunities at DEP. But again, I think on the whole, those of us who work in this space would like to see those grant programs stood up a little bit more from a legislative perspective. And it would be nice to get some consistency on, are we going to fund $400 million of individual member projects where you're really not getting more than $1.5 million maybe at most. There are some exceptions there versus can we fund, you know, water quality improvement grant to the tune of a couple $100 million.
In the vetoes themselves, it seemed a little, to me, and I don't know if you noticed a trend there in member project related to environmental issues, but I was a little surprised in not seeing as many what I would consider, and these are kind of projects that I care about, are restoration kind of projects that have a big water quality component, but seeing vetoes of some of more of these local government projects where one would expect that given that the water quality improvement grant was not funded, that they would have a better shot at surviving.
Yeah, it looked like the trend this year, and I mean, those trends change budget season over budget season. You know, a couple years ago, it seemed like the governor did not like or particularly focused on vetoing fire departments or emergency operations centers. But to your point, I think this year he looked at municipal projects in particular and sort of just probably asked the general question, is there an alternative avenue for this local government to fund that particular project, either through, quite frankly, doing the politically unpopular thing of raising their own millage and raising taxes, or from some other avenue? But, you know, the question then becomes, now we have this ballot initiative that has passed as part of the special session where there will be a proposal before the voters for an increase in the current homestead exemption. And then, you know, what does that do? Should it meet the threshold of 60% to local government budgets as a whole? How does that affect environmental projects, environmental funding? You know, these are questions that remain unanswered.
There seem to be and maybe that's part of the question embedded in there in the context of the now ballot initiative for property taxes, is it did seem like there's also demarcation in terms of haves and haves not and have nots in terms of whether or not they survive that veto. Larger local governments more apt to get vetoed, smaller ones you don't see as often on that. At least I didn't notice that on the list.
Yeah, and I mean, you could make the argument that maybe that was done because some urban areas generally have a certain political affiliation next to their name. I mean, you can't take the politics out of politics. And, you know, individual vetoes, there are any number of reasons as to why they happen, whether it's merit of a project, whether it's project sponsor, whether, you know, you can insert 18 different reasons.
Yeah.
But it's hard to necessarily seek a pattern. But I noticed that that trend as well.
Well, there's a ton in the paper, Patrick, and I thank you for that. It is a great paper. Let's get into the meat of it a little bit. You mentioned the broad brush of the whole thing, but let's talk about articles we like. What do you think?
I was really excited in this edition about the variety we had in our opinion pieces. I thought it was really cool that we had a very large perspectives section. Usually we have one or two pieces that come in. This edition, we had not only Congressman Jimmy Petronis talking about permitting, we had Agriculture Commissioner Wilton Simpson talking about rural and family lands. We had Keena Corey talking about battery collection, which we feature her quite a bit to kind of understand what's going on in the world of recycling. Had a piece about utilities. We also had a piece about landfill, leachate, and a little bit on the property tax issue, just a perspective on what local governments may do in this issue. So I like the fact that we had a really strong authors, really strong opinions, and just a good variety of content there for people to chew on.
What about you, Jeff?
First of all, really great looking paper, Patrick. And I also like the diversity of articles. I have a hard time choosing my favorites here. I've got more than one that I really like. We covered WOTUS again. There's a lot going on there. There's a new rule amendment that just got filed to the White House. So we should see some new rule language, I think, before Marcos. We'll have something really good to chew on there. I think it'll be really great to. So the article that we ran, sorry to go back and forth, but the article we ran was asking the experts what the final rule is going to look like, because we're in a public comment period. Nobody really knows what the final rule is going to be, and we've got some opinions in here about where we think it's headed. It'll be really interesting to see how the how this rule amendment that, again, it's sitting in the White House right now for before public release, and it'll be cool to see how that comes out, projecting what was going to go. But that's not my official answer yet. My favorite article, I got a brag on, I think it's Patrick, you probably secured the deal with Sachs Media, but we have a partnership with Sachs Media this year. We're bringing a lot of cool survey and data information to our readers through the newspaper or through the newsletters. And this paper, we've got an article in here by Karen Cyphers. Where have I heard that name before, Brett?
I don't know.
Anyway, great article by Karen Cyphers about a survey we did. It was two surveys running in a companion. We surveyed all of our registrants, and they surveyed likely voters. So we kind of got a slice of the general Florida, public, and then we got a slice of really the environmental industry. Really interesting to see where the public and our industry aligns in their view of certain issues, and then where there are big differences. And I think those are going to be fascinating for people to read about. And I'll say this too, because we're going to be talking about Marco here in just a little bit, but Sachs is also going to be down in Marco this year talking about these survey results in detail and kind of how to use surveys in our business and how to kind of get a sense for public opinion on certain issues, and how, again, you can maybe even guide public opinion a little bit if you get in front of issues and really communicate effectively and all that. So anyway, excited about that collaboration. Great article from Karen, and looking forward to see what else Sachs comes up with for us.
Yeah, I think it's a nice, I don't know if I call it a gap, but it's a nice extra facet in my mind to add to not just the specifiers work, but also, summer school, is to have an idea. We talk to each other a lot, meaning each other in the environment. Yes, well, she and I also. But the environmental professional community, we talk to each other a lot about how we think about things, but we seldom pause to find out what everyone else thinks about it. And understanding, I think, is the first step in maybe bridging some of the gaps in how you approach things. So that was really cool.
That's a good call out, Jeff. The newsletter graphics that they're doing for us are really cool, and Karen does a great job with it. And Sachs has been very valuable to bring a lot of those data sets to our readers. And so just another plug for the newsletter. It's free. Sign up on our website. Easy. Comes in every Monday morning, and a good variety of articles. But then you get the added benefit of getting this data brought to your inbox.
What do you like, Ryan?
It's hard to pick one, honestly. Kudos as well, Patrick.
I picked two.
You never do. You never do. Two is really kind of low for you. I mean, honestly, enjoyed reading about some of the restoration work going on at Lake Apopka and looking at Patrick's hurricane season preparedness article. I have to say, I didn't realize that Hurricane Cristobal was a potential name this year. Mm. And, much like the hurricane football coach, if it has to perform in a big game, it probably dies somewhere in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico.
well done, sir.
Oh boy.
But no, I really do think, the commentary articles were great. I mean, having Congressman Petronas and Representative Connerly and Commissioner Simpson contribute to this article was fantastic. Loved the look back on EPSS from my partner Jeff here in terms of the past years of the conference and some of the celebration we could be looking forward to here later this month for the 40th.
I'll limit myself to one, because I'm anxious to get to talking about summer school as well. But I would say it's like I enjoyed seeing more opinion pieces this go around. I think it's great to hear people's opinions. I think the news is really important, and it's important to have for people's awareness and ability to have opinions about things. But I really like those pieces. What I chose, though, as an article is not an opinion piece, but it is good news, which I also like to talk about when it happens, and I like when that makes it into the specifier. And that is, according to the American Lung Association, 21 Florida counties were considered clean air counties. And in fact, even further, 0 communities in Florida were listed in the bad guys in terms of air quality. I also like the fact that most of these that are listed are in our neck of the woods. So Fort Walton Beach, Destin, Gainesville, Lake City, Tallahassee. These are places where air quality is really good. I think it says a lot about the work that Alexis Lambert and the folks that are doing over at DEP and their forebears at the department, like some of you sitting to the left of me. And so I think it's a great thing. I think it's a great thing that people get to know about these good things when they happen.
I'd like to point out a lot of municipal electric utilities in those locations you name. So obviously investing, reinvesting in their infrastructure and keeping that ambient air quality down nicely.
Let's talk a little bit. Let's go through first. We got some recordings coming, so I want to do that real quick on the specifier side and the water for fighting side before we roll into EPSS. But some of these are related to that very thing. So you've seen some come out recently in the specifier. Stephen Terry Lewis, that was a great recording you and I did, Ryan.
It was.
Linda Dickinson and Cindy Littlejohn also. And we're looking at, part of this was, I think, Ryan and Jeff's idea of talking to some of the old schoolers that were there. You know, your dad being, you know, one of the originators along, obviously, with Chuck Littlejohn. And so it was nice to hear and have some of these conversations. What did you think about the Stephen Terry conversation?
It was a lot of fun. Obviously, Lewis, Longman, and Walker has become an institution in the state of Florida. And looking back on how Stephen Terry both got into the practice of law, how the culture was sort of defined at that firm, it was a lot of fun to chat with them.
And you and I have a recording. We're doing it panel style at Marco Weiland, but it's going to be a legislative panel. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a new idea. It certainly is part of the course curriculum in Marco this year. We've got Representative Overdorf, who I think this will mark his, what, fifth time on the Specifier podcast, as well as Senator Truenow and Representative Connerly, trying to mix up sort of the engagement with the audience, but also have a course that is effectively a podcast recording and talk to them a little bit about what happened, not only this session, but maybe last session as well in the environmental arena, what those who are still going to be in office, because Rep. Overdorf terms out in November, what they kind of see is some of the biggest future-facing environmental issues in the state of Florida. Senator Truenow obviously sponsored a very critical stormwater bill this last session, and Rep. Connerly has certainly inserted himself tremendously well into the environmental arena because of his professional background.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. On the water for fighting side, we have a few that just come out. An Adams and Reese boss, Herschel Vineyard, former DEP secretary, Justin Friedman from Res, was on as well. And I've also recorded Cindy Littlejohn mostly to talk about her books. The trilogy actually is sitting right here in front of me. And then we have Mary Ellen Winkler, who I'm going to record down in Marco Island. So I'll be hunting folks down to sit and record me. I'll have the equipment down there with Ryan and myself. Come and see me if you want to expose yourself to the world verbally, not in the way that Patrick thinks about it.
How dare you?
All right, so... with that, I think that's a weird segue, but a segue nonetheless into talking about the 40th Environmental Permitting Summer School.
40th. We've been excited about this year for a while. It's a milestone year. Talked about it last year that we're going to do something big for 40, and we've been trying to build the kind of enthusiasm for it through the year by going back and really uncovering, rediscovering some of the old t-shirt designs and some of the old themes from prior years. They're kind of fun to go back through that and think about, you know, where everybody was back in the 80s or 90s on environmental policy. And it was funny to see how some things just never change, and we're still kind of arguing about the same things, you know, decades later. And then others, it was interesting to see things and how they got resolved over time. Those were fun. And there's a piece in the paper with some of our, you know, more noteworthy t-shirt designs, but we have all of them now posted online, and you can, there's a QR code in the paper, and you'll be able to get that down to Marco too, and you can kind of go back through the history of all that. In the paper, we've got the course and exhibit hall map again. For those of you, you know, you're going to get this paper in your packet, so we've got some resources in there for you. We covered some of the new topics and new panels that we have. We try to redesign the curriculum every year, and we probably took a little bit more of a scalpel to the program this year and did some more changes than normal to try to really get some new stuff in there. Besides the one we talked about with the survey with Sachs Media, we've got a few other panels that are new, and I hope you guys enjoy those.
It seems like you're working on enticing people into staying through Friday. Usually that's a day where people start to make themselves rather scarce. They're getting back to their lives, ones that aren't staying through the weekend. But you have some really good panels going on Friday that I think are going to be worth seeing.
I'm glad you brought that up, Brett, because we have this theory that if you are somehow on my bad side, you get scheduled for Friday. And that is absolutely not true. We do try to bookend the whole conference with some good classes, both at the beginning, at the end. And, you know, obviously we've got the early birds the day before. We want you to stay. There are going to be people, more than 1,000 people there, you know, all week long. And I hope you come and stay the week, bring your families, enjoy your time down there. We sure are.
Yeah, I definitely want to highlight the fact that it seems that there is sort of the notion that Friday is a bad day, if you will. Certainly not. It looks to be more robust than normal, which is a good thing. Very excited to see familiar faces and engage in conversations with everybody that occur on a yearly and certainly throughout the year basis. And yeah, please stay for the weekend. Miklos usually gets a cabana, so drinks on him.
I think it's... Friday is fun at the pool after the conference does wrap up at noon. The pool that afternoon on Friday is fantastic. One more thing I wanted to mention is last year we had one panel in the big Banyan Ballroom, which is where we have lunch. It's the biggest room in the conference center. We picked a class and it was on WOTUS actually, and we had the Assistant Secretary of the Army down, and it was a great panel, and we had a ton of people in that room, more than 200 people. That's actually an underutilized room during the rest of the conference. Outside of lunches, it pretty much sits empty. So we moved a few courses down there, courses where we thought people would be, you know, more interested in, maybe a bigger crowd. When you're wondering, where the heck is my class? I'm used to being on this level, and you find out it's downstairs. It's because it's in the Banyan Ballroom. So we're going to be rolling that into the programming now, where you'll go downstairs for some of the highlight classes. Some of the bigger classes will be down there.
I think there's also the added who knows what's going to happen benefit. I think last year you had a surprise guest at summer school. You want to talk about that, Patrick? Because you got a chance to be a beat reporter that day.
I was inadvertently thrust back into my old career. Yeah, no, it was great that we had the governor come and make a major Everglades announcement, and that was a cool thing for the 39th to be able to host that, and it was a good. It was a good coincidence in the timing, but we had, as Jeff said, we had some federal officials there and good coordination with the governor's office on that. So fun to be able to see that and have it unravel at the conference.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. We do now, but I mean, because the girls, you know, it's vacation time for them, and so we'll be there Saturday before and not leave until Saturday, and then.
So you can attend all the Friday.
100%. 100%. Unless I'm recording, but other than that, we're good.
Everybody's attending Friday. Friday's the new Wednesday.
Friday is, in fact, a new Wednesday. No, I'll be looking forward to seeing some of these panels, especially the newer ones, especially those that involve work my wife does, and so that'll be fun. But mostly, I like being there. I like the discussions that happen. I like the fellowship that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, in essentially what amounts to a class reunion once a year, and so looking forward to it, and hope to see everybody down there.
Yeah, let's wrap it there so everybody can start packing. Thanks for listening to the Florida Specifier Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review. If you don't like what you hear, it's my fault, so do be sure to let me know. Don't hold it against the rest of the guys. I recommend subscribing to the Florida Specifier online at floridaspecifier.com, where you can read your environmental news and commentary the new, old-fashioned way. But do be sure to subscribe. It's easy, inexpensive, and offers a ton of ways to read, watch, listen, and learn at your fingertips. Your support is greatly appreciated.
Production of this podcast is by Carl Sorn and David Barfield at Lonely Fox Studios, and we want to thank Bagels and Biscuits for letting us use their music for the podcast. Join us next time as we delve into the issues, policy, and people that environmental professionals and policymakers want to know about. For Ryan Matthews, Patrick Gillespie, and Brett Cyphers, I'm Jeff Littlejohn, and we'll see you next time.